streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they
call me home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is January 9th, 2013. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have a special story. Tonight we're going to hear about Jenna Han, and you may have seen her story back in 2005 on Snapped, or recently in 2012 on the Investigation Discovery Channel. Both shows were about a plot of one sister trying to kill her twin sister, supposedly, and they named it Evil Twins. But tonight we're going to hear Jenna's real story. We have a special guest that we're going to bring on here in a little bit, and it's a friend and advocate of Jenna Han, and it's Mr. Candidate Adams. Before we bring him on, we're going to welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, I would like to thank everyone who tunes into our show worldwide every week, and we would just like to say we're not going to prolong you any longer. We're going to get to one song. And we're going to go to Miss Jada, our little niece, and we'll be right back with Mr. Adams.
I want to say thank you to the Streets Don't Love You Back. This is a song that I did with my dad. It's about never giving up. My name is Jada, and this is my new song, Bring Up the Lights.
My mama died, had to figure out a way. It made me wise for my time. You can't fly to the ground, but shine without trying. If I want it, I'ma get it treated like this thing is mine. Another day that you know won't be fair. You ain't be scared, you gotta take a chance sometime. Just go over to a take a hand, say, girl, you're gonna be mine. Cause time is on your side, but only if you hop. So what, you somewhere heady cap, Jackie, can't piss stop. Cause it might be your last lap around the oval track. You never know when it's time to go, so you need to go get that build up momentum. If it's needed, second on new, you better read it. If you believe it and you beat the book, then I suggest you read it. Pay attention and listen so you relate to relativity. If it's your business, be busy. Flexibility, I don't say I'm what is it? Man, a machine, dirty or clean. Tell them both don't come too close. Not things ain't always what they seem. Is it a dream or reality? You never quite know with me. It's the secret of life. Anything you want will be the same. Just alive and keep them raised high. If you want more than getting by, if you want more, I hide your lies. You can't listen to their lies. I'm gonna make it. You can't stop me. You can see it in my eyes. Put your hands in the sky. If you more than just a lie, and keep them raised high. If you want more than getting by, if you want more out your lies, you can't listen to their lies. I'm gonna make it. You can't stop me. You can see it in my eyes.
Jada with her father LD out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Thank you, Jada. And now we're going to tell you a little bit of background about Jenna's story before we bring on our guest, just so that you know a little bit about her story. Jenna and Sunny Han were both born in Korea in 1974 and immigrated to the United States in 1986. After their mother falling on hard times, it was decided that the two sisters should live with distant relatives in Campo, California. The support that the two girls had, more often than not, came from each other. They even achieved the honor of being co-valedictorians at their high school, despite the difficulties of the difference of culture and initial language barriers. After graduation, the close relationship of sisters found very difficult at times. While both sisters made mistakes, each in turn fueled a familial strife that began driving them apart. What was two sisters that seemed inseparable over time became arguments and discord as the two young adults, with no role models, attempted to find their way in life. The series of events culminated on November 6, 1996. The facts portray a very different story compared to the perceived attempt by the prosecution to read Jenna's mind. Jenna went to Sunny's home with two friends. The boys went into Sunny's apartment and bound Sunny and her roommate. Jenna was outside waiting as the boys were inside the apartment. The police were called and quickly arrived on the scene. The parties were all arrested and the trial degenerated into the media-hyped Han's evil twin murder conspiracy case. What followed was a lawyer named Roger Alexander who represented Jenna, yet he represented no defense. The prosecution, led by Bruce Moore, hinges a conspiracy charge on a receipt from Target without even having possession of the items from the receipt, and the police, who had no inventory of evidence. Then a confession of one of the boys in which Jenna's counsel would not cross-examine, leaving Jenna exposed to this conspiracy charge despite interrogation interviews that would have aided to clear her name. In the end, confused jurors questioning why no defense had been given. Jenna adamantly asserted that she did not plan to kill her own twin sister. Sadly, with the backdrop of the media storm, the jury accepted the prosecution's theory and inferred that Jenna Han and the boys planned to kill Sunny. Consequently, Jenna was found guilty of conspiracy to commit murder in addition to burglary and false imprisonment. The conspiracy conviction netted her a sentence of 26 years to life in state prison. Jenna was only 23 years old at the time of her conviction. Jenna accepts full responsibility for the burglary, the robbery plan, and the anguish imposed upon her sister and her sister's roommate. Jenna understands the history of familial strife between her and her sister, combined with the events of November 6th, could have allowed a jury to draw the conclusion that it did. However, only Jenna Han is privy to the actual thoughts in her mind that day that she knows the unequivocal certainty that she would have never murdered her own twin sister. Furthermore, Sunny Han has forgiven Jenna and still does not believe that Jenna would ever cause her any harm. During nearly 15 years of incarceration, it may be tempting for Jenna to go down the avenue of angrily railing against the injustice of her conviction. But in her time in prison, Jenna has come to peace by accepting that she owes a debt to the victims and to the society at large. Nothing can excuse or erase her terrible actions. Even the murder conspiracy conviction was itself ultimately a direct consequence of her poor exercise in judgment. She blames nobody but herself and desperately wishes she could somehow undo the past. In an effort to atone for that past, Ms. Han has unquestionably been a model prisoner at Central California Women's Facility at Chowchilla during the last 15 years. One must be left to question if the actions taken on November 6th of 1996 warrant a sentence of 26 years to life, especially when Sunny Han herself pleaded on her own sister's behalf for mercy. Furthermore, having served 15 years, one would have to ask if the time presently served is sufficient for the crimes that were committed and admitted to. She was denied the opportunity to take the stand on her trial, tried jointly with her co-conspirators, and afforded mere hours of defense over a 10-day period while facing a media firestorm. 1 year after her conviction, the good law came to Jenna's aid. In an effort to obtain nearly 1 million plus signatures to petition for a retrial with support from the Republic of Korea, obtained the signatures and appealed to the courts asking for Ms. Han's retrial. These efforts were ignored by the state of California, despite Ms. Han having international support. In 2008, the Federation of Korean Americans signed petitions on Jenna's behalf. These organizations, in total estimate, collectively represent more than 2.5 million Korean Americans across 113 associations asking for clemency and mercy from then Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. This, too, was ignored by the state of California. So the question is, what can be done today, and what is there that has not been exhausted? And there is something that we can all do to help Jenna. So tonight we're going to hear a little more about her story.
Hey, welcome right back here to the Streets on Love You Back radio show. And you just heard a little bit of Ms. Han's story. But right now we're going to get right into the interview with Mr. Adams. And he's going to touch up on that story right now. So as of now, you can formally introduce yourself to the audience, and we can get right into the segment.
Hello, Rob. Lucinda, how are you doing tonight?
Great.
Absolutely awesome. Well, thank you for having me on the show, and we've been looking forward to this for a while now, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. Had this
plan
for a while.
Well, yeah. Well, it's been good to get to know you a little bit, too, before tonight, so I appreciate
Amen.
That. But wanted to get into the story a little bit, talk to Gina about how to present this. And she said basically to present the story how I came to meet her and how I came to know her and really just detail it from through my eyes. So she has a unique way of approaching things. And so that's what I'm going to do. Whenever I first ran across the story, actually it was her name and just an address, a friend of hers that put some information out online, and they were simply asking for people that might would be willing to support and help, not monetary in nature. She's always been really well taken care of by her close friends, and as you'll learn in a little bit here, some of the friends are quite impressive. But they were really looking for someone that might could help break the story out. And at the time, I saw the name, didn't really know the details. I copied the name down, the address, and left it on the desk. And then at that point, forgot about it for about a week or two. And it just kept nagging at me as time went by. But eventually I picked it back up, found it one day, and I said, I've never written an inmate before. I don't even know what I'm getting into, don't know who this is. So I just wrote a letter and sent it to her. About 3 or 4 weeks later, I get a reply back. And interesting correspondence began. She's a very intelligent woman, graduated as a valedictorian with Sonny. And as time progressed, you know, the topics went from history to philosophy, economics, technology. She's really loves technology, wants to know what's out there, how things have changed. You know, you got to keep in mind whenever she was incarcerated back in 97 that you're looking at a time when pagers were pretty predominant. Cell phones were really emerging. You know, pay phones were still everywhere, and computers were still running off of 486, you know, and so she's really naive as to what's out here in a great way. And so it was an education process, and she loves learning, and that's the kind of people she likes to attract, people who can teach her things, people who can help her with understanding the world today. So we began to develop a friendship, and I started introducing her to some of my friends. I'd print off some conversations that we have online and let her meet a few, and she said, I'll tell you what, you know, why don't you meet some of my friends? I'm like, well, okay, cool. That sounds, it'll be fun. So she sent me a list of names, phone numbers, and she says in that letter, you know, this is the first one you should contact. It's my stepbrother. So I gave him a call. He got on the phone that first time, and we ended up talking for about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. A great guy. Spent some time in the Army back in the 1970s, so he's a vet. He was actually with her from the beginning. When she first was in Orange County Jail, he was the only non-Korean that actually stood up for her. He ran down to the courthouse, and the Korean media was there. He says, you know what, I support Gina. And he goes, something just isn't right. And they put him on the Korean media, and the next thing we know is she knows that the reporter is handing her a slip of paper, sort of slid it to her without anyone looking, and said, you know, look, this guy here, he's the only one out there that's not Korean that's supporting you right now. You might want to keep his name and number and his address. And so she did. She wrote him a little bit later when she had time and the ability to, and they really developed a close bond. And he's been with her ever since. He knows the story from beginning to end. He knows every test and trial that she's gone through. Somebody like him is rare, and a heart of gold. And through his good times and bad times, he's always protected her. There's actually two men that support her that came from the Army. Both of them, oddly enough, have had stage 4 cancer. Her stepbrother was one of those two. While he was fighting stage 4 cancer, he hid it from her. He wouldn't tell her. And she found out later that he beat it, and it tore up. She almost lost somebody that she really loved. And after that, she made him promise that he'd never keep a secret from her again. But there have been people that have just come to fight for her that you just wouldn't believe. Another man out in New Jersey, he knew her around the same time. He came into her life shortly after her stepbrother did. This guy, he works for the state of New Jersey, but he has a unique thing that he does on the side in his spare time. He likes working with churches. He puts together care packages. And, you know, how many people do you know? Most men, when they get home from work, they come home, they might pop open a beer, sit down and watch the, you know, the football game, and that's about all, or work on the hot rods, whatever they do. This guy, he puts together medical packages, and he finds ways of getting them into areas of the Philippines where he gets to communities that desperately need them. He will help or find people that will carry it over there for him. I go back and forth to the Philippines a good bit, so you know, we've talked about trying to work some stuff out, even getting it into some hands of some people I know down in Mindanao, around Zamboanga City, Sulu, places that are war-torn by the Abu Sayyaf and stuff like that. So, you know, it's interesting to meet the quality of the individual that comes into her life, and he's another example of the character of people that are around her. People write to her all the time. And a lot of times people, she says that you have a lot of people that chase high profile cases, and a lot of times she's learned over time which ones to ignore, which ones are just, you know, curious, and she really goes after those who are of a quality individual. And after I began to know some of these people, I go back to her and I say, you know, well, you have some really amazing friends. She goes, yeah, yeah, some really good friends. And she says, so, you know, what do you know about my story? I said, I really don't know much about your story. You know, I just haven't looked at it. You know, I'm learning from you. I figured I'd let you tell the story. She says, no, I don't know. I'm not going to tell you the story. She says, everybody always wants me to tell the story. She goes, I'll tell you what you do. You go online. She goes, it'll be easy to find me. Just look me up. And you make up your own mind. And then you come back and tell me what you think. I said, okay. So I did. I went online, and I found plenty of information out there, obviously. And what I saw inside of the media and what I saw from the different documents I could find, just superficially, did not add up to who I was talking to. That's where the problem really began for me. Anybody can come up and say they're innocent. Anybody can come up and say, you know, things weren't right. Things didn't go right in the trial. There were technicalities there. I should have gotten off. I should be free. You hear it 1,000 times out there. That's the business I run and the things I run into, the people I run into. Somebody comes up applying for a job, whatever. You run into it and you look at the application. No, it's not adding up. With her, it's different. Whenever I begin to see how she lived her life, even though she's behind prison walls, and the people that are around her, it began to open my eyes to something. So I went back to her and I said, you know what? Yeah, there's something not right here. I don't know what it is. For me, the jury's still out, but, you know, I believe that there's something not right. She goes, that's fine. She didn't judge me for what I thought or you know, the fact that I wasn't backing her 100% at the time. Yeah. And so she let me figure things out on my own. And she says, you know, everybody always comes up when they try to judge me. She goes, and I understand that. She goes, look at what they did, but look at what they said about me. I've come to expect it. I live with it, and it's part of my life. And she goes, everybody's going to always make up their own mind. It doesn't matter what I say. And she goes, I could go out into the media. She goes, I can go out into the media anytime I want. She says, you know, yeah, I use the Korean media more. And in fact, this is the first time anyone's ever really spoken to her inside of an English audience. She's used the Korean media several times. But she really does not go into the media because of the fact of the way that she was treated, the way her family was treated. They ripped her mother and sister apart. It's unbelievable. And she refuses to go out into the media because of the fact of she really just did not believe that it would make a difference, facing that kind of stigma. So she begins telling me, you know, I'm going to send you some material. And I said, okay, sure, send it. So she sent me some copies of pieces of her case file, just bits and pieces here and there. It wasn't even enough to really put together and know anything. She really didn't have much. So what I did get, just it opened my eyes a little bit further, and she goes, I want to put you in contact with a few more people. So I met a few more people, started emailing back and forth, and one of her friends in Los Angeles happens to be in Hollywood. I'm not going to mention any names, but he happens to be in Hollywood in the industry there. Like I said, some pretty impressive friends. And just shooting emails back and forth, I'm getting to know these different people. And again, it goes back to a testament of the character of the people that are around her. And so as time kept moving forward, the more that I learned, the more this wasn't right. And she finally put me in contact with enough people that gave me enough information, and I came back to her and I said, you know what, Gina? Yeah, I don't know what went wrong yet. I said, but this is wrong. She says, well, go ahead. I'm glad you think that. And she says, but, you know, Sung Lee Kim tried to help in 2008, and he was the president of the Korean Federation at the time. John, who is now working with us again, he helped back then. He took a letter that she wrote and helped find Sung Lee Kim to help her. before him, you had Kim Dae-in, who was with the Good Law. The Good Law is an interesting organization. It's a human rights organization, but they tie into many facets of the government there within the Republic of Korea. And her winning that man to – and I've spoken with him, you know, myself. And so winning that man is just amazing. It blew me away. And he still to this day loves Gina to death and will do anything he can to help her. He is very passionate about her cause. And so I saw the procession from the time she was incarcerated up to today and the lineage of people that stepped into the fray to try and do what they could to help. And it was overwhelming. When you can sit down and take this thing piece by piece and see the heart that was put into it from day to day and from year to year, it's mind-blowing. I came to her and I said, you know what, you know a little bit of my group and what we have done in the past and how we've helped in different ways for different people. And I said, you know what, I'll try to help you. I'll do what I can. And she goes, all right, great. Let's do it. So we began putting together a few things. We put together the website and began to network inside of her existing friends and networks. We networked inside of the Korean community. We began networking with the American friends. It just spread like a wildfire. And the people that she knew began working with their external connections. She has friends in California that are writing to other friends in New York and New Jersey, and they're networking through churches, and then the churches in L.A. are networking, then the human rights organization in L.A. is networking, and our side is networking, and it's just spreading at an exponential rate. Every week that goes by, it grows more. And the level of the intensity that we want to bring to this is bringing basically the efforts of everything in the past all together at one point and focused on one thing. So right around July of last year, she says, I'm gonna do something for you. I said, okay. I said, what are you going to do? She says, I'm going to give a little boost to this thing. She goes, it's been a long time since I've been in the Korean media. She goes, I really hate using the media, but I'm going to do it just so that way you can get some extra help. So she did. She went to the Korean media, and it was timed out to where there was basically 4 days inside of the Korean media where everything from a phone interview to a newsprint in the Korean Times. And luckily, a very special reporter had a heart for her case and made a lot of this possible as well. Wish I could mention his name, but just don't have the permission to. But he stepped out there and really put himself on the line for and pulled this off. An old friend that was an editor with the Korean Times stepped in there as well, helped pull it off. And basically we countered Investigation Discovery's story. And with that, it ignited the blaze inside of the Korean community all over again. With that being done, the internet being what it is, Investigation Discovery airs the show. The viewers come in, they are able to see what the Koreans are doing, and we have at that point a confluence of different forces happening at the same time. It was just perfect timing. And at that point, we went to LA, met with the Koreans in person. We get on the ground there. There's a little press conference there. We work out some details of how we want to do things and spend a little bit of time with the people. They're getting to know the people. And anytime you do something of this nature, you always need to work with it in a different setting. It's a geography of people. It's a geography of working with the personalities and their skill sets. Everybody has a different skill set, so you use it to the best strengths that you can. And I, at that point, was able to meet some of her friends in L.A. That's the first time I met her stepbrother. Picked me up at the airport and went out to eat, had a little chat, and then I went to meet her Hollywood friend and sitting there with him and at his home and having a lunch there and had a conversation about the family. I began learning more about the intricacies of Boo Kim and Sonny and Gina. He had met Gina, and he had also met Sonny, so he had perspective from both sides. whenever he's sitting there, he says, you know, you're really going to do this, aren't you? I said, yeah, I'm going to do this. He says, I believe you will. He says, tell you what, I'm going to give you this. He handed me his entire research portfolio of what he had on the case, dating back from forever. I mean, he had basically every piece of media in it that you could imagine. And after he handed it to me, he said, looked at me and he said, get her out. And am I still in there? Still there?
Now, how much younger is her stepbrother than them?
Her stepbrother, he's actually older. Older.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, he's actually older. He's in his 50s. He is, I think, 53 or 54. I'm not for sure. He's older, but he calls him. She calls him Opa. That's Korean for elder brother or respectful, you know, position or title, kind of like how she would call Sonny, Oni. So, yeah, he tells me, you know, get her out. So I said, okay. So we go from there and come back to the East Coast. We begin putting together everything that we brought back with us, and then we end up on a second trip out to L.A. And that's whenever things started turning interesting. Arrangements were made. We managed to receive documentation that we needed to put together this thing and brought it all back, sourced it through my people. They took a look at the documentation. They began breaking down the case, sifting through it. And what's in the report that's online right now is really just bits and pieces. The case is so big. The case filed, the transcripts themselves are roughly about just under 2,000 pages. That doesn't include all the other supplemental documentation and everything else that goes with it. It's so massive, and then trying to put it inside of a document that's under 150 pages is almost an impossibility. So we had to take out the key elements that we thought were most important. But we put it together, and then we decided, okay, how do we want to use this? You know, is she doesn't like using media. She doesn't like, not that she won't, but it's something she's afraid of. And I said, well, let me talk to her about it. So I started talking to Gina a little bit, and she tells me, you know what, I told you to do whatever you felt like you needed to do. She said, you know, you just do what you think is right. And I said, okay, I will. And she says, but I want to give you one more thing. I said, okay. She goes, I'm going to let you talk to my mother. And I said, all right. So I placed a phone call. I talked to Boo Kim. And at that point, more stories started coming out. I'm sitting there, I'm talking to Boo Kim, and she starts telling me her feelings and emotions of what happened. And she says, you know, I'm just so angry that what happened has destroyed my family. She says, what people don't understand is that my daughters were having a fight. She says, you know, they don't understand that what happened in my life, and they want to blame me. They want to, she goes, I know I made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, but to take my daughters who are having a fight and then try to say one tried to kill the other when she goes, it's wrong. And then she said, you know, they don't know what they did to Sonny. And she goes, you know, this has affected Sonny, and this has affected Gina. And I began asking, you know, what happened to Sonny? I wanted to gain the perspective there. And she began telling me stories about how she would always, Sonny always operates through her mother. She'll speak through her mother. When she wants to say something to somebody, a lot of times she will go through Boo Kim. So when I communicate back and forth, you know, it's basically how things operate. And she said, you know, I've always tried to get Sonny to write Gina directly, you know, talk to Gina. And she goes, Sonny's written, I don't know how many letters, but she'll rip them up. And I said, why would she do that? She said, well, one time she ripped them up, and she said, Gina's dead. You know, Gina sent home some pictures. And she set the picture, or Boo Kim set the picture out on the table. Sonny comes into the house to visit her mom. She was talking to her mom to eat a meal and everything else. And They get up, starting to walk out, and Boo came and put it where Sonny's purse was. And Sonny looks down, and she sees the picture. She stops, picks up the purse. She's just looking at the picture, but she picks the picture up, and she puts it in her purse. So at the same time Gina's dead, she's not dead. You know, there's people don't understand what happened there. They don't understand how things broke. And trying to bridge that connection, when Gina was taken away from Sonny, more happened than just losing a sister. More happened than just a family member going to prison. You have to understand that growing up, they only had each other. They always only had each other. Boo Kim was gone most of the time. Whenever they needed food, they had to find it. Whenever they went to school, they didn't even know English whenever they started school. They went to a class. Imagine going to a four. Imagine landing in China, and let's say you're 14 years old, 12, 13, 14 years old, and you're walking into a classroom, and you're expected to understand the curriculum, and you don't even speak the language. Imagine trying to do that. You have to graduate as co-valedictorians. They did it by taking a Korean-English dictionary, and they basically translated the classes. It was amazing.
Wow.
Absolutely amazing.
Right. I just want to iterate on something right quick. Sure. Brother Adams, your story that you're telling, man, is heart-wrenching. I just want to tell you that right now. And from the point that I'm getting from the things you already have said is that the media, the people out here around the world don't understand one thing. You know, when you got a brother or a sister, that's one thing. But when you got an identical twin sister, that's like one. And if you take one from the other, you done crossed both of them. You know what I mean?
That's right.
So it ain't like you sent Gina to jail. What you did was crush Sonny and Gina, you know.
That's
two sisters having a fight. You know, the fight went to another page for a few minutes, you know. But everybody came back to realization. You know what I mean?
That's right.
But
the little
guys who was involved, you know, they came back with a bunch of lies because if Gina get 26 years, okay, why the little homeboy do 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever he did, and he had the career, you know? So that don't even, you know, that right there should set the tone to let people know it had to be a misunderstanding somewhere in the whole justice system, you know what I mean?
Right, that's right. And whenever you look at the case file itself, you begin going through the transcripts. One of the things that stuck out in my mind that was so just unbelievable was they take a statement made by Archie Bryant, and the statement was supposed to be an admission of guilt. The problem is that he sits there and he says, I was there, I'm going to plead guilty, basically is what he said. In the courtroom, it was never argued. What was he admitting he was guilty to? Okay, you're guilty. Guilty of what? And the prosecution takes that statement, and they use it against all three. But then at the sentencing of the three kids, they are sitting there asking the court, you know, are there any considerations that need to be made for the defendants here, or the convicted here. And Bruce Moore, the prosecution, stands up and says, well, you know, Archie had admitted that, you know, he was guilty, but technically, you know, he really didn't admit it was guilt. He just admitted he was there. So he didn't really admit that it was an admission to kill Sonny. It wasn't an admission to go in there and kill Gina's sister. So now you have a picture to where the prosecution is using a statement in the trial itself to convict these three. And then he turns around inside of the sentencing and says, oh, no, it's not what I meant. It doesn't mean what I said it meant. you have evidence coming out where, understand this, this blows my mind. They're using evidence in a courtroom, gloves that were not used in the crime, gloves they did not have in the courtroom. They did not have the evidence. It was not there. They then take receipts that were found in Gina's purse. That means in their mind that the gloves should be used in this trial. They have gloves that were found in a trash can. When I say they have, I mean they theoretically have. They know that the gloves were in a trash can, in a public trash can, at the Alamo car rental. And an officer found them. Victor Ray says, no, they weren't used in the crime. We don't need them. I can understand that call. That's a call made in the field. But you don't go back and then use that evidence against three people in a trial of this nature, especially when you didn't collect it, and especially when it was found in a public trash can. How can you prove that this evidence is to be used against these three kids? You can't. How are you going to prove? Right. How are you going to prove that gloves, these gloves, were theirs? It's impossible. But yet they used it against them.
Well,
the trash bags that she had, it was somewhat, you know, facetiously said that, you know, they're going to chop the body of Sonny up and put it in their trash bags. The trash bags were found in Gina's hands, and there were items in the bag. There was personal items. What was in there, we don't know. It's not documented. The police never documented it. So now you have trash bags that enter the courtroom that are sitting on the evidence table, of which there is no documentation, although everyone agrees that it was found in Gina's hands. There's not a documented state of evidence. They don't know what was in the bag. In other words, we cannot know if she was using the bags for transportation of items, personal items. We do know that she went to Mark's house, which is a friend of hers, and sorted through items there where she had some belongings, threw trash away, and took some items to where she was staying. So she was using trash bags for those 2 weeks of getting her personal belongings. Well, if you go and think about it, Gina was saying all along that she was wanting to go to Sonny's place just to get her belongings. Interesting.
Right.
Talk now, about trying to use an inference.
Right. And so, with that being said, but Adams, I want to keep you right there on that point. Don't lose that point, okay?
Sure.
You stay right there. We're gonna take a commercial break and a music break, and we're going to be right back with you. Right here at the Streets of Love Back Radio Show, we're here tonight live, living in color, with my man, Mr. Adams, and we're talking about Gina and Sonny Hahn's story tonight. So right now, without further ado, we're going to send this song, this special song right now, we're going to send that out to Gina and Sonny Hahn right now. So Gina and Sonny, never give up. The song, Never Give Up. Be right back.
Little homies, what's good with y'all?
What's up with y'all,
huh? What's good?
Can't make no shots, man.
I mean, you know, can't give up, though. You got to keep trying, you know. Practice makes perfect.
I love
you. You know, it's for all y'all. You know what I mean? Just, you know, stay focused. Don't give up. You know, never give up. No matter what it is in life, you can't give up on anything. That's real. You know what I mean? So just keep your shot going. All y'all, you know.
Okay.
I look forward to coming to the game one day. NBA, man. I'm trying to see y'all there.
Yeah.
All right? Okay, loved ones. Y'all be good, all right? I just came to check on y'all.
That's all right.
No matter what it is in life that you want, you gotta go out there and get it. Don't let it keep you asleep, but a dream.
Never give up
on your goals. Stay focused on you. Focus your view. Succeed, cause I'm hoping you do. Keep climbing up the ladder, cause the key to success. Go hard and go home. Never settle for less. Life is stress, but we gotta deal with it, homie. Send a prayer to the man to put a shield on it. Work hard for what you get. Appreciate what you got. You can always improve. Just don't stop. Go ahead with your dream to achieve in your life. Take a chance like rolling the dice. It won't come to you, so you gotta go get it. At the end of the day, add up the losing and I never gave up. Me believing in myself is the way I came up.
Trash bags were used, and they were on the evidence table, but yet they could not show where they were on any inventory of evidence. And the reason for that was the inventory of evidence was not there. It did not exist. The San Diego police, which would have been the ones to put this inventory of evidence together, they stated that they did compile an inventory and that it was given to the lead investigator. So there is a disconnect somewhere there to where the lead investigator is now saying that one never existed. San Diego police is saying that one did exist. Either way, it leads to a courtroom where no inventory exists. There's no documentation of the evidence being there. And yet you have trash bags sitting there, and it was brought up by the defense counsel saying, okay, how did this evidence get here? Well, how does evidence like that be allowed to stand inside of a court when there's no way to show where it came from? There is a process of discovery that takes place. And it's not only the issue with the trash bags, but also with the gloves. No gloves were used in the crime, but the prosecution is using the gloves for the purpose of saying that it is one more item that is an overt action towards proving the conspiracy for murder. Now, if no gloves were used, not only were they not used, they weren't found. There was not one set of gloves that were found other than the ones in the public trash can, which was left and destroyed. that they could use. So all they had were receipts. Now, there were multiple receipts. It was more than one receipt. There were multiple receipts there. And on these receipts were different items. So you also had on the receipts Figaro's. You had water. You had other general items that were then purchased. And so the prosecution saying, well, you know, they were purchased within such a close proximity of time that she kept the receipts, and obviously it was for this purpose. Well, explaining the proximity of time and the fact that they were purchased so close together is rather easy. Gina had been in jail for another incident and was on a work furlough program. She left, and she was going to get her belongings and do what she was going to do. So she wanted to start a new life and start over. But, of course, bad judgment, and it was stupid. She leaves and begins purchasing these different things to do what she needs to do and get her belongings, and she was going to take off. So everything that was purchased up until November 6, when the incident took place, was in a two-week time frame. She was in jail prior to those 2 weeks. So any purchase made, obviously, after she left the work furlough program, would have been within a two-week time frame. So it's ridiculous that you're trying to use that point to say that, you know, well, it's purchased within such a close proximity that it should be able to be used in this manner. You take on top of it the items also that weren't found, such as the pine saw. No pine saw found in the apartment, none in the car, nowhere to be found. But yet it was used against Gina. Also, it was not in the courtroom, and they didn't have it, nor was it. The only thing they had were receipts, just receipts.
Right, and one thing I'm going
to Sure.
One thing I want to ask you, Brother Adams, as time went on, right, in the case, when you and your people got involved with the case, how did Gina feel about that as far as did it make her happy that you and your team was getting involved? Let the viewers know that.
Yeah, it made her quite happy, in fact. She has, over time, had so many people come into her life and have tried and failed. You know, she gets happy that people are trying to help, but yet she tries not to get her hopes up too much. You know, she was more than thrilled to have everybody come on board and do what they're doing. And she said, but, you know, it's been 16 years now. You know, it's 16 years that I've been here. And she goes, I have hope, but, you know, and I'm so thankful for everyone doing what they're doing, but... She goes, it's hard. It's hard for me to see tomorrow, the possibility of freedom.
Right.
And I said, we're fighting for it. And
right.
every day's a fight.
Yeah, I feel it, man. Because, you know, I got three brothers doing life in the penitentiary, you know. So
right.
If anybody can feel it, trust me, I feel it, you know. I never lay eyes on them as far as on the outside world, you know what I mean? And
right.
That's three of my siblings, you know, and it's like I think back sometime and I see how I just want to iterate this here on Gina's story, and it makes me angry because I watch ID Channel and a lot of different channels because I like to keep up with what's going on in that circuit as well. But
right.
One night I was watching the ID Channel, this was a couple weeks ago, and I had to run and tell my wife about it. You know, I'm sitting there. And I see all these different crimes, and I see all these people going to jail with all these long prison sentences, right? But in 1958 in Cincinnati, Ohio, a lady was messing around with another lady's husband, and she lured the lady into a meeting and took the lady in the woods, shot her in the head, set her on fire with gasoline, and burnt her up.
Right.
And killed the lady, and all of a sudden she got a death sentence, and the death sentence resulted to life in prison from the governor at the time of Cincinnati back in the day, and
right.
from life in prison led to 12 years in prison. I'm looking at TV like, how did this jump
right.
from a death sentence to life in prison? So you do 12
right.
years and come home
and you done actually killed the woman, shot in the head, and bumped her up. And you got you got men and women in prison that ain't killed nobody. You know what I mean?
Right.
They committed
exactly.
a crime. And if you commit a crime, okay, it's just about right you go do your time. Okay, I ain't no argument on that. But
exactly.
that don't deserve a life sentence, man, at some of these
exactly.
laws that they put in place. And this lady get out after 12 years and actually committed a murder, not just only shot the lady in the head, but burnt her up with gasoline.
Right, right.
Now,
and that's
me,
part of the outrage with the Korean community. They are sitting there looking at this thing saying, you know, here Gina is. She's already served 16 years. The case is so shoddy for conspiracy to murder. The burglary is obvious. I mean, come on. It's obvious.
Right.
She burglarized her sister. So, okay, we'll call it time served. You know, she's already done 16 years. It's ridiculous.
Right.
No one died.
She made a mistake. She got into it with her sister. She made a very bad judgment. Okay, everybody understands and grant that. But you got so many prosecutors out here that want to make an example out of small-ass cases, excuse my language, but they get a big-ass case in their face. Well, the one I just told you about, you can shoot somebody in the head, throw them off the bridge, burn them up. Oh, and you get an out date.
Exactly.
You know, your out date is earlier than the person that ain't even killed nobody. I mean, what's wrong with that picture, bro, Adams? Tell me.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And it happens all across the country. I mean, Gina is one case of many. But, it's the epitome of the whole problem. You looking at even her own family, you know, Mr. Norris, he's sitting there even on the ID channel. Whenever he was interviewed, he says, you know, it was nobody died. He even says himself, I will believe to the day that I die that she would have never harmed her sister. And if she was going to harm her sister, why did she, when the police showed up on the scene, why did she run to the police officer screaming, what's wrong with my sister? Is she okay? If I was going to kill someone, I would not go to the police officer asking if the person that I wanted dead was okay.
I'd be running away from them.
Exactly. It's common sense.
Right. You know, and it takes people like you and me and my wife and other people, man, to have a large, strong voice out here in this place we call America, you know, because
they
got their laws in place so bad. In these states, you know what I'm saying? And it's just ridiculous, man, because back in the 80s, you know, I grew up in Detroit all my life, you know? But in the 80s, when we was hustling, selling drugs and different things like that, they had a law in place called a 650 law in the state of Michigan. Anything over 650 grams of coke, heroin, or what have you, that was natural life in prison, man. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I'm
looking
at this shit like, you know, my homeboy, he got caught up, and he had two bricks, you know, and he got a natural life sentence, and just 2 years ago, he got out after 18 years and had never had a traffic ticket, man, you know what I'm saying? And they changed that law in Michigan, but at the same time, once again, we got these people that's killing people, throwing them off the bridge, I'm burying you in the backyard, you know what I mean, I got 20 bodies in my house. But your ass is in and out of prison before I get out of prison. And I ain't even killed nobody. I mean, tell us about that, Bro Adams, and how you and your organization feel about this law, man, how they railroad not only Sonny, but how they railroaded people out here like Gina, you know what I mean, and other people, like you said, that go through the same thing. Give us your take, man.
Oh, yeah, it crosses so many spectrums. In Gina's case, there are different opinions out there. The Korean community has stood beside the fact that it was racially motivated. I believe that, you know, that could be involved, but also the law being – one of the things that they didn't understand was that the sentence being what it is, the minimum, I believe, was 25 to life, and, of course, there was 1 year added for another incident that was involved in the same crime. But at the same time, you have to look at the media exposure. When you have, when a court allows the media influence inside of testimony of the court. That's uncalled for. That's absolutely ridiculous. And so now you have it turned into, as one of her friends said, it was a circus show. And you have these sentences being given out that are unbelievable sentences, and especially in California. Anytime you have two life, you might as well call it life. And forget 26, forget parole. The odds of getting parole when you have two life, it's ridiculous. And what happened? She went there, sent the boys in. They went to rob the sister. It was stupid. It was a mistake. But do you take somebody's life for that?
And nobody got killed.
Insane. Nobody is killed.
Nobody's dead. Everybody is still running around. You know what I'm saying? And life has not been taken. But I want to point out, too, to the viewers, while we're on the air tonight, I want to point out to the viewers as well as the move Arnold Schwarzenegger took. You know what I mean? You hear letting people off in California, you know what I mean, that actually did a lot of badder things than Gina Hahn and other people. You know what I'm saying? But you leave her in jail and don't even pardon her, but you pardon these knuckleheads out here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then the flip side of that, you sleeping with other women outside of your wife having kids with the maid. You feel me? But your ass wanna get on TV and do some shit like this to Gina Hahn and other people in California, but you fucking the maid.
Right.
Come on, man. Let's keep it real out here, man. It's time to get this thing together, man. Gina Hahn need to be free. She made a mistake. Okay, we grant that. But 16 years, man, enough is a damn enough. And I'm talking to the California people that put her to jail, all that. The prosecutor, your knucklehead ass, too. You need to check yourself. You know what I mean?
That's right.
I just get sick and tired of this, man. And we keep it real here at the show, baby, you know?
I understand. I agree 100%. 100%. And, you know, that's why we are looking to Governor Brown. And Governor Brown I've done a lot of research on him, he's a rather interesting man, rather amazing man in a lot of ways. But the way that he approaches things, I like how he approaches logically with his different agendas and how he perceives cases. So it all depends on now, you know, will the courts be willing to at least look at this report, look at what the Korean people are offering? And I just got off, you know, of course, me and Kim Dan normally communicate via email or whatever. And so they are now seeing what they can do from their end, and maybe we can get some fire coming from that side. They've given us support already, and hopefully we can bring on more. We're going to keep building this thing until we kick a door in somewhere. It doesn't matter. That's the bottom line. You keep going until you kick a door in. Now, as far as major media is concerned, you know, we could go to major media at any point in time. You know, due to the nature of this report, due to what happened in the case, maybe I'm just, they're going to look at it and say, dear Lord, you know, what are they saying? But from our perspective, we could have already gone to major media. We could, not only through Gina. Gina's just one avenue. Not only through another one of her friends that is obviously got connections, but also another one of my friends over here, his wife is a media executive with a major media organization.
Right.
It's not that difficult. So it's a matter of choice for us. Bottom line, we do not have to go to major media, but we will if we need to.
Right.
We're trying to ask as nice as we can. Her appeals were denied. Her habeas corpus was denied. Her 2008 pardon was denied. And so now we're here once again. Do we need to pull that trigger?
Right. And we ain't scared to pull it. We here tonight letting them know. We letting them know now.
Right.
We ain't giving up.
Exactly.
We moving. We about this Gina Hahn case. We about that release. We about setting that young lady free. And we about tired of the bullshit, man. That's just the bottom line.
That's right. That's right. That's what it comes down to. She has the ups and downs that I see her go through. Some days she'll call and it's good. Some days she'll call and she's down. It is an emotional roller coaster, but she fights through it each and every single day. And
Amen.
She does her best to keep her hope up. She's right now her mother is losing her husband. He's near death. Sonny is in desperate need. And here
wow.
she is behind prison, fighting her own battle and then trying to keep her family together too at the same time.
Right. And
you
trying
know,
to keep
it's
her
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right.
And I ain't seen my twin sister in 16 years. I mean, that's the most heart-wrenching thing right there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So, you know, we as a community together, you know, the American friends came together, the Korean friends came together. We all came together and said, you know what, let's give it one more push. Let's kick in a door. And Gina picked me to be the wrecking ball.
My
You know, I've got a little bit of a collar around my neck with a leash tied to it, you know, somebody holding me back right now.
Right, but when they let the door open, though, you know what that old
that's
song,
right.
Who let the dogs out, woo,
that's
woo,
right.
Feel me? We come.
That's right. Cut the string, I'll wreck it.
All day.
And
you know, we right here with you, baby.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, it's just a matter of time. You know, right now, patience is starting to wear thin. We want to see results. We want to see something. And whether it be a simple communication of, hey, you know what, we're working on it or whatever, you know, just let us know something. And that's all we want to know. We just at least want the governor to look at the case. You know, if the governor looks at it and he says, oops, no, there's nothing we can do. We tried, we gave it our best shot, we at least hit our target. So I am convinced he will say yes. So with that being said, at least give us that shot. Give us that chance before we have to break something.
That's right. And if they better understand, man, that nobody is playing out here, you know, and it takes people like you and I and the missus and other people that's on your team to stand up and fight for people, you know, because so many people behind bars that need to be behind bars, but there's so many people behind bars that need to be home. And there's so many people
that's
behind
right.
there with these injustice cases. It's so unreal because you got these knucklehead prosecutors out here that just want to say, I want a case in next case, you know? They ain't looking at
exactly.
the evidence, and a lot is pushing the evidence up under the rug. And it's a young man who we did a write-up on a few months ago in California. He did
mm-hmm.
19 years in prison for a wrongful case that he wasn't even guilty of, and when it all came out, the prosecutor withheld evidence from the case, and the guy didn't even do the case, man. You know what I mean? So
wow. Wow.
If you're out here doing this, man, I mean, we need to change this game up. If you say
right.
you're a prosecutor and you out here prosecuting these cases, man, and you lying and hiding, you know, your hand, okay, all that time that other person did in prison, they need to lock your ass up too. I mean, they need
that's
to
right.
just set the ball in chain and get real out here, man. Only because you go to school to be what you going to be don't mean you go to school to mess over people, man. And that's what
that's right.
happens out here every day in this world.
Every
and
day.
It takes people to stand up, man, because if we don't stand up, nobody is going to listen, man, if you stay silent, you know?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You cannot stay silent. You know, I don't know. It's, Gina told me, she said, you know, after I'd responded and we had got to know each other, she had her friend shut down the request for help. And she said to me, you know, I shut that down. I said, yeah, I saw you shut it down. What happened? She goes, well, I'll tell you what happened. She goes, remember you told me how you put my name and address on the desk and you didn't write me for a little while? I started laughing. I said, yeah, I remember that. She said, well, you remember that nagging voice in your head that just wouldn't let you, you know, leave this alone? I said, yeah, I remember. She goes, well, I believe in miracles. She said, you know, I was praying. I said, really, what were you praying for? She said, I was praying for a group of warriors to come along. They showed up, vets. And to top it off, she said, whenever I learned who you are and what you did with you and your guys, she said, I knew this was it. So that hit me like a ton of bricks, too. You know, this is a zero-fail policy. You know, there is no option here. There is no turning back. We won't go home.
No.
There is nothing else left to do. Everything else has been tried and was ignored. We're put in a corner. We are her friends. You sit there, and like I've detailed to you, what happened to Sonny, they sat there and destroyed this family. What are we supposed to do as friends? Pat them on the back and walk away and say, hey, good luck in life? No.
Well, you know, and they wonder why. What's wrong with society nowadays when they, you know, they lock up the fathers and mothers of kids that, you know, that are in prison now for nonviolent offenses and maybe drug charges or something simple. Where they
right.
could be rehabilitated, they could be out here taking care of their families. And I mean, if there's been a lot of families destroyed.
Right, there are. There are families destroyed by the system across the board. And I've learned so much. Before I became involved with Gina, I really did not know that much about the prison system or the criminal justice system or anything like that nature. Most of our activities was done in another. We would help other vets or deal with politics, things of that nature. But I began to get involved in this, and I began to hear stories. You're bringing out all these other cases. There are other Koreans out there that are desperately needing help. One man who was convicted of murder, that he wasn't even there. I mean, he wasn't there. The guy didn't speak English. His friends pointed at him and said, yep, that was him. They locked him up. I mean, there are just case after case after case. It's just unbelievable what's out there. And, you know, I'm sitting there in front of the missionary who's working with Gina, and she's the one telling me these stories. She's telling me this stuff. And she's got a book of these pictures, and she's flipping through them. She's going through story after story, and it was too much. I couldn't look at them all. I just couldn't do it. And, you know, at some point I said, you know, this is enough. I cannot look at it anymore. I'm sorry, but I just can't look at it anymore. It's just ridiculous. I mean, you sit here, some of these guys that are with us have been overseas. Some of them have come, you know, lost friends. Some of them have come back home. You sit there and you watch what these men do day in and day out. They fight for freedom and you bring us back home. And then we find things going on here that you're fighting against overseas. That's messed up.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, what are we supposed to do? You know, this is what we were made for. This is what they put us through in whether it be training or what have you. We were designed for this. We come back home and we find this, especially amongst our friends. Yeah, we're going to stand up. What do you expect us to do?
Right.
So, you know, and I don't know, after Gina, maybe it'll continue for me. Maybe it'll continue for some of the other guys. And this has given us something new that we just never expected. You know, Gina was an eye-opener. And
well, I hope that after Gina, you guys continue, because there are so many people that need our help. I mean, there really are a lot of people that do not need to be in prison. There's innocent people in prison. There's people, you know, like I said, that have committed small, petty crimes that are in
right.
prison for many, many years, taken from their families. And, you know,
right.
a lot of people want to say that it's racism or different things. I'm sure that's part of it.
Right.
But I think, you know, there's a lot of laws that need to be changed. There's a lot of people
Absolutely.
That shouldn't even be practicing law.
Right.
You know, but,
well, you know,
but we need to continue standing up for the innocent people and for the injustice.
Right. And I believe the judge selection process should be altered, too, in California. It, just for me learning the process of how judges, you know, a lot of them are elected or appointed. And the appointed ones seem to do a little bit better than the elected ones. I don't know what it is. As long as you have 10 years on the bar, you can run for the position, you get elected into it, and you go in. I'm not sure if that's a good enough qualification to be sitting there looking at a case, especially one that's involving circumstantial evidence, and one that's as complex as this one is, and then trying to decipher, you know, the judge in this case totally screwed it up. Why did that happen? And it should not have happened. You should have people that are able to handle these cases better than what they are. And it's not just California, but it's every state in the country. And a lot of times the little man goes in, he's standing there, and especially if you have a public defender, what hope do you have when these people are automatically looking at you, yet you did it, you're guilty.
Right.
And they're working together.
Right. So, you know, we're at a point to where this is something that's going to affect us for a while. You know, and as far as Gina's concerned, we did make her a promise. We, you know, she's got a unique group of people around her. As far as I just want to say this real quick. There have been people that have contacted us, and they are asking if we need money or if Gina needs money. No, do not send money, please. We're taking care of it. What we're doing, we're taking care of ourselves. We got, if we need something, we'll do it internally. We've got enough people. She's got enough friends that are well off enough. We're able to take care of ourselves. And so, you know, don't feel the need to even bother to ask. She's fine. She's doing good in that department. Everything's going to be okay there. But we did make her a promise. We're not going to go away. We're not going to leave her. And that's one thing that she was afraid of in the beginning. You know, she goes, so many people have come and they tried. She goes, and it's not that they did it purposefully, walked away. She goes, but, you know, you get to a point where you hit so many brick walls, what do you do? And I said, well, that's where you need a big gang. I said, that's where you need enough people coming together at the same time. Enough minds come together, you'll find a solution. You'll solve the problems one problem at a time.
So, Candidates, use your website and let the audience know exactly what can they do to help you. How can they get involved?
Oh, excellent. The website is, you can either Google Gina Han, J-E-E-N-A, then her last name, H-A-N, or you can go directly to the website, www.jeenhan.com. Once on the website, if you're curious about the report that we have written, you'll see it blatantly right there. It says new, then it talks about the report on the case. As far as what to do to help, we're asking two things now at this point. One, write a letter for Gina. Send it to the governor. The address is on the help page, and there's even a letter there if you want to. You can download, sign it, put it in an envelope, mail it. Get it out to the governor so that way they can see the support growing. But the bigger thing is, spread it. Facebook it. Twitter. Whatever you want to do. Whatever medium you have, spread it. This is about more than just Gina being done wrong. For the Koreans, this is about the community being done wrong. This is about, just like Rob and Lucinda here is talking about, the injustice across the board being done wrong. We are not asking for anything else. We're not asking for money. We're not asking for recognition. That's why no one even really knows who we are. It's not about us. We promised Gina that we would never benefit from her. We promised her that we would never benefit from her name, her loss, the pain that her family is in. We said we came to help, and when we're done, we'll disappear. It's that simple. No one will ever know that we were involved in her case. We decided to pick up another one. That's great. But for Gina, if you do this for her, you're helping more than just Gina. You're helping the whole mindset of changing the system. Let them see the errors. Let them see where things were done wrong. We need to keep up the momentum. We need to affect as many people as possible. By doing this, getting involved, you can change the system. People sit back all the time and they decide, you know what, I want to do something great with my life. I want to reach out and I want to make a difference in other people's lives. A lot of times people don't know how to do that. But even though you may not have all the skills, you may not be able to do web development, you may not be able to organize, you may not be able to come up with logistics, you can get involved. Get connected with the right people, like Rob. He's in Lucinda. They're doing an awesome job. Hey, I've looked at what they do. It's unbelievable. I love it. That's one of the reasons why I told Gina. Gina got his information. She sent it to me. He said, check this guy out. I said, sure. I said, Gina, this guy's awesome. And I said, you know, he's unbelievable. And she goes, all right, we'll do the radio show with him. I said, okay. And so, you know, she okayed you in no time. And it was, you know, trust people like this. These are people that are making a difference. If you want to do something great, if you want to do something great, you just step in there and you support those who are doing the right thing.
My man.
And that's how you make a difference.
We appreciate that too, Brad Adams, man. And I just wanted to say, man, that, you know, once again, I look at that ID channel all the time, you know, and that's
right.
Where I got Gina's story at on that channel, you know? and
right, absolutely.
I wrote her, and you know, my wife was like, okay, you know, that's cool, you know, because we write a lot of inmates, and we have our newsletter that goes out to 150 prisons across the country every month, fed and state men and women. And, you know, when
right.
I wrote in, she finally wrote back, you know, and then when you sent me that email, that blew me away, man. I'm like, wow, okay, then cool. You know what I'm saying? I was like, she did get the message then, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So
right.
That was a good look, man, you know. So what did she tell you, Adams, when she shot that message to you about a guy wrote out the blue from the streets on London back?
Well, she actually gets a lot of media requests. As a matter of fact, from the ID channel, she sent me, there are two producers that contacted her. One was a junior producer, one was a senior producer. And
right.
When the junior failed, the senior tried. She sent me both letters, and she said, I don't want to do this. So I shot him an email. I said, she says, no. I just left it at that. And she got yours, and she goes, I have no idea who this is. I haven't heard of him before. She goes, check him out. I might like him.
Yeah, you know, we just sent her a little letter with our website on it, you know what I mean? Our postcard and how we introduce ourselves to the inmates that want to join us and receive our mail and stuff. So, you know, when I got your information and you was like, yeah, you know, as we got to talking, you were like, yeah, she would like to, you know, me to do the radio. So and I was like, cool, then,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Awesome.
And, you know, because
awesome.
This is what me and the missus do, man, and we just love giving back. So it was incredible.
Excellent.
Man. And we're so glad to have you and your team on the show tonight, man. And
oh, absolutely. It was awesome
message.
Being here. Awesome being here.
Yeah. And it go to missus, you know what I'm saying? And once again, we want to give Gina and Sonny Hahn's whole family a big shout-out right here on the show worldwide tonight. And we just want to say keep the family in your prayers and also keep Gina's mother's husband in your prayers as well. And we
right.
just continually going to make a difference out here. The Adams crew and the Streets Don't Love You Back crew and other teams that roll with all of our teams. You know, they got a big team. We got a big team all over. So
absolutely.
We just want you to continue doing what Brother Adams said. Spread the message any kind of way you can. Word of mouth, Twitter, Facebook, email, whatever you need to do, because it takes people and it takes a voice to change these laws and let these people in these seats that's sitting there forever, let them know we ain't taking it no more.
Absolutely.
All right, and do you want to give any last shout-out candidates to anybody?
Well, there's a special Korean out there I've just come into contact with, Andrew So. I might give you some info on him there, Rob, and see if I can make a connection there for you. Yeah, he's real intelligent guy, real interesting guy. But, yeah, and to Lynn, she's out there, a supporter of his, and friends in Hong Kong out there that are actually tying in with us now, helping out. You know, we appreciate all you're doing. And, yeah, everybody out there, John, Terry, Howard, the whole group, you know, it's amazing, doing a great job. You know, we love you to death. Just keep doing what you're doing, and we're going to fight it in.
My man.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And with this radio show, it's just another platform that you can share on all your social media. Get this story out there. Share this radio interview, this episode. Just share the link and, you know, get the message out there. Get her story out there. Get it heard.
Absolutely. Excellent.
And also, I want to give a shout-out to my man, Emilio Time, and I want to give a shout-out to Michelle. And don't forget, the boxing event is going to be January 18th. Don't forget it. It's all on our Facebook page. It's all on our website. And we just want to say we give much love out to all our members behind the walls. And I give a shout-out to my three brothers behind the walls doing life, bitch, Christopher, Marvell, and Robbie. Much love. I'm still holding you down, homie. And much love to all my homeboys behind the walls, too, that educate these cats about the gangs, drugs, and violence, you know. So we just are holding our thing down heavy in the walls and on the streets. So we are sending love to everybody. So don't forget, man, if it's somebody that need help,
always be willing to reach out and hold that hand, because you never know when the tables turn and you might need that hand. You know, you be up one
Absolutely.
Day, you can be down tomorrow, homie. So don't think you're the greatest person in America that can't fall to your knees now. So always know how to give back and help others, because it ain't all about self, baby, you know? So with that being
That's
said
it.
And done, we're going to go out with a bang tonight. We're going to go out with Guide and Protectors, baby. And that's going to be, once again, dedicated to Gina, Sonny Han, baby. Guide and Protectors. So we want you to hold on with us, Brother Adam, and listen to this
Thank you.
High track, baby.
Sure.
All right, and just one final word. Remember that it only takes one person to make a change, and you can be the change. Get out there and do something. Stand up for something. And this is a song, Guide and Protect Us, Rising Sun.
Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging that two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. The first one I call every day when I wake and pray. Yeah, the one who is there when no one has a care, I say, Lord, you strengthen my soul when my mind wants to go astray. Yeah, and lift me up high when I fall and my ground gives way. Lord, how precious your love and your grace and your counting days. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, now I shall repent. Yeah, with all of my strength I will find bliss in iron fist. Lord, the breeders of hate and the seed today don't exist. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging that two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. With enemies close all around, I will call your name. Yeah, and slaughter the weak, you quickly with no thought or shame. Lord, for my heart is firm in your hand, so I've no disgrace. No, I'll hail up your name every day with a smiling face. Boy, I never can give in a praise to your tenderness. Lord, to be in your infinite grace is my happiness. Yeah, no matter the time or the place, you're omnipotent. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, so I shall repent. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging that two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.
Yeah, we tried the long rocky road. Buffalo soldier, fight the power, freedom, war. The last we step on the throne. The conquering disciples from your congregation. Yeah. Collect your security. We build a better nation. Time beside the unity. Say nothing and fight, nothing and war. But brotherly love can destroy oppression. If we come together, we can conquer all our foes. Live victory eternally. But if we keep on murdering, see so much petty things. We're crumbling our destiny. But we were meant to rule upon the earth and multiply creativity and love. So I will always try to show love and respect until I die. And so I will humble and pray. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy, swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me, even when I pass away. My legacy lives on to my seed and my working, every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.